Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and POC media such as
Now and Then.
It's Now and Then.
Now and Then with Christina Ricci. So her character should have been gay. I don't care what anyone says. I don't care if you think, okay, tomboys can be straight. But when I was a little queer girl and I saw this little queer girl doing the same thing as me, fucking beating the boys at basketball and being braver and smarter and more like strong than anyone, get out of here. That bitch was a bad bitch. Shout out to Christina Ricci and Now and Then. Go watch it with your queer lenses.
So you just thought she was gay, but like...
It wasn't like canon, like she should have been, but I mean...
But she like didn't have any... Like, you didn't ship her with anybody?
I shipped her with this other little girl. I shipped her with everyone.
Okay.
That's with me. With me when I was 12. Oh God. No, I wanted to be her. I was definitely not shipping her.
Cabrona.
What's poppin', chingona? What's up, girl?
Havana, Ulana. Okay, we always do this. We like just mumble it because we don't know anything.
We don't know the words. So, let's talk about what we just watched.
Havana by Camila Cabello. I know it's been out a while, but still, it's like...
Super gay.
And, you know, it wasn't supposed to be. We really read into that.
It's because we're super gay.
That's we put why. On the queerest goggles of all. Or like, even I turned up the setting because I normally don't see it that way. But it had that dude from The Fosters. That kind of threw me off.
There was a guy coming out of the closet. Come on. That was completely unnecessary.
Yeah, the there first, like, didn't minute. Need to
be. So, Camila's, like, sitting on a couch watching a novela. And in the novela, it's her. And so she walks in on her supposed boyfriend with two girls, but then her real boyfriend is his twin brother coming out of a closet.
And she, they have to state it. Like, why did they have to state it? She's like, you were in the closet? I was in the closet. Now you're out of the closet?
He said he was in the closet for her, and he came out for her.
Oh, my God. I don't know. Like, I was like, you did not have to put that in there.
That was completely unnecessary. No, but I like, it was cute. It was such a cute video. Like, the beginning is like, it looks like a real, like, house. Like, Le Juan is in it, playing, I suppose he's supposed to be Cuban, because Camila's Cuban?
Yeah, I mean, the grandma or whatever. Puerto Rican. He's supposed to be Camila's grandma.
Yeah, he's supposed to be the abuela. But I really like that they refer to her as abuela.
Yeah, because I'm in Spanish.
I mean, like, they're actually talking Spanish, and they have subtitles for y'all. And the subtitles are kind of off. Like, I felt
I didn't even look at them. I was just like...
No, because I've seen the video like 20 times, so...
Oh, wow. I've seen it once and it was like 10 minutes ago.
Oh.
No, but you said that you were mentioning about Le Juan being Puerto Rican, playing... I mean, like, obviously, you can't take this particular part seriously because he's a man playing an old lady in the first place, right?
Yeah, like a full beard. Like...
But he's like a Puerto Rican man and it kind of brought up the subject that... You know, we don't typically get, like, Cubans playing Cubans, Mexicans playing Mexicans, Venezuelan people playing Venezuelan.
Yeah, it's kind of just, like, throw all the Latinos in there, doesn't matter what they are, and just, it's a clusterfuck.
Yeah, like, they just, like, throw all of South Central America plus Mexico in a bucket, and then they pick one out.
Yeah, and just, like, everyone just speak in your natural accents, and it's like, wait, but we know the difference.
Yeah. But. I mean, of course, like I said, in this particular video, I'm not going to judge it, just because it's, like...
It's cute.
It's not to be meant to be taken seriously.
No, there's a whole like novella scene,
but that's definitely a fucking issue IRL.
It is. Oh, but props to this video and props to whoever set up the design for this video, because there's aluminum foil right next to the AC unit that's in coming through the window. Like, that's some real hood shit. Like, you put the aluminum around it, that's real hood shit. I love it. That's attention to detail. They did that shit right. But it's weird that they can remember to put the aluminum around the AC, but they have a Puerto Rican playing someone who's supposed to be Cuban, and the song's about Havana. Anyways, but shout out to the aluminum foil. That's such a cute video.
Yeah, you weren't even watching the same, like, I was watching it on my phone, and you knew the part where that aluminum foil came up. You're, like, behind my phone, like, you weren't even looking at it. I wasn't even watching it. Yeah,
like,
and you're,
and
like,
I was like, ooh, aluminum foil.
Do you see it? Do you see the aluminum foil? I was like, and I had to, like, squint my eyes a little because it's in the background. I'm like, yeah, I see it now.
Like, that's attention to detail, all the doilies everywhere, and I'm like, this feels like an abuela's home, you know? Like, I yeah. like that the set design, whoever was there, they're clearly Latino, or they knew what was up, because this shit was popping. But yeah, so today, what are we talking about, Maite?
Well, I'm gonna be talking about Jane the Virgin. upon kind of a request.
And I'm going to be talking about Dolores Huerta's new documentary / badass bitch. Like, yes.
Bad bitch. Hey. I'm excited to hear about that because I haven't seen that documentary. And have you seen Jane the Virgin?
I've been forced to watch a couple episodes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you haven't, you're not like, you don't know all about it.
I watched the gay parts. I mean, what other parts are there? I assume it's really good, but it kind of has a novella feel, and I was never really into novellas, so.
Yeah, it's like a satire type of thing.
It's a satire of a novella, but.
It's like Modern Family, but longer and more dramatic, you know what I mean?
And browner. Shout out to
way
that.
Way browner, yeah.
Like, sometimes, like, I'm not opposed to it, but it's not.
It's like, not what you would expect.
No, I know. I watched, like, I've actually sat there and watched it and been like, wow, I'm sucked in, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's like Law and Order when you turn it on accident and you watch the whole episode. Yeah. That's how Jane the Virgin is. Like, accidentally watch it.
I watched it, like, barely. Like, I watched the first, I would say, two seasons, which these are, like, long seasons. These are 20-episode seasons and they're full-length episodes. So it's four seasons right now, but it's really eight in my mind.
Oh god, yeah, because we're used to like eight episodes,
ten episode seasons or something like that. This is like 20 to 22 episodes,
and it's really good writing too. Like, I give them that.
It's pretty decent writing, and they're creative in their format.
Yes, they are,
for mother freaking sure. So yeah, it's about Jane the Virgin, or she's like a virgin for
one episode.
Most of the, no, she's a virgin for, like,
I mean, you know what I mean, like before she gets inseminated.
Well, she got inseminated, that didn't stop her from being a virgin.
It sure didn't.
So yeah, that's kind of the concept of the show. She is a virgin. She's like 21, I think, at this point. I think
Gina Rodriguez is supposed to be 21.
She was pretty old at this point, and she was a virgin, and she was like going to school. And they kind of talk about her background, where like her grandma kind of like semi-traumatized her, and that's why she's been a virgin this long.
Which happens in most Latino families.
Yeah, they're just like, your flower is gonna be ruined. Like, you're gonna be ruined if you do this before marriage.
Aren't there like religious undertones in this?
Oh yeah, it's like a big part of the narrative. I mean, just like it is a part of our lives, you know, like not on purpose, but it is. It's there.
Yeah, it's the Catholic guilt shit.
Yeah. And, so she gets artificially inseminated. She goes to, like, to the doctor for just, like, a checkup or something like that. And this doctor is important to us.
Yeah, she's important to us.
So this doctor, like, I guess she had just found out, like, she found out something.
Her,
like,
fiancé.
No.
I thought it was her fiancé was cheating on her.
Yeah, something like that. So she's, like, distraught and she's, like, crying. And, like, they tell her, like, she has two patients. One of them is getting artificially inseminated, the other one's just getting like a checkup, and she gets them confused. You know, honestly, this would never happen in real life. I doubt.
You're supposed to triple check before you do, like,
yeah,
do something.
But she gets artificially inseminated with this guy's sperm, and it just so happens that that guy is the brother of that doctor.
Yes,
which is Luisa, and he's also somebody that she met a long time ago and had a thing for, kind of. So it's a novella, I'll tell you that. It's, yeah, basically
isn't
a novella.
Like her boss at the hotel that she works at as a waitress?
Yeah, so he owns the hotel that she waitresses at, exactly. So but I'm going to go into the doctor.
He happens to be kind of fine, girl.
Oh, he's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And you know, usually you're always going to have like whatever super hot guy. Let me just, like, give names out here because I haven't said a single name.
Rodrigo?
No. It's not Rodrigo. Rafael.
I
so he's Rafael. He's like the actor himself, Justin Baldoni. He's not even Latino. He's
what?
Like, yeah, he's like of Italian descent.
Oh,
he's basically just American at this point.
He's American.
Yeah, but his backstory is kind of cool. So the reason that his sperm was being injected into anybody was because he had cancer and can't have children anymore, so he had like frozen a bunch of sperm before he had like chemo and stuff like that. So he survived the cancer and now he's in amazing shape because he's addicted to being healthy, essentially.
Yep, drink. That's one.
Yeah,
count it.
And of course the main character is Gina Rodriguez. I feel like I don't even have to explain that, like, it's Gina Rodriguez. She plays Jane. She's Jane the Virgin. She's amazing.
She's like nationally adored by everyone. Yeah, she's amazing.
She's of Puerto Rican descent, even though the family here, her family, her mom and her grandma, they all live together at the beginning of the series. They're Venezuelan.
Okay, they're supposed to be Venezuelan?
Yeah, but none of them are.
No, I think I know.
They're all of Puerto Rican.
They're all Puerto Rican. Shout out to Puerto Rican. I mean, there's plenty of Puerto Ricans in Florida.
They should have just made it Puerto Rican because the show is based in Miami.
And there's I think the second Puerto Rico most populated population of Puerto Rican people.
Probably.
Say that 5 times. Population of Puerto Rican people.
Population of Puerto Rican people. I'm not saying it.
I'm not saying it 5 times.
That many times, but yeah, it's like you might as well have done it. You're based in Miami already, so it's about her, and it's about her getting artificially inseminated. That's what the show's about. And she's a virgin at the time or whatever. She's dating some other dude, and then like it becomes a love triangle. Your typical setup, right? Like
typical novella.
Yeah. So I'm gonna like just real quick, since we kind of got into it already, like this is supposed to be a Venezuelan family and everybody around her is supposed to be kind of Latino, but first of all, Rafael is not like we've just explained.
Italian.
His wife is supposed to be also a Latina, but she's not. She's like of like French and Austrian descent, and she was in Israel for a long time.
She's never been like in a Spanish speaking country ever, like to live.
She's not in any way related to one.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then the mom, which is Andrea Navedo, who plays Xiomara, she's Puerto Rican, and the grandma is also Puerto Rican. The grandma you might recognize. She's like in everything.
She was in Glee, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was in Glee.
Santana's disapproving grandmother.
Yeah, in case you guys were wondering. I think Rogelio de la Vega, who one of our listeners, Marimar, was mentioning that.
Shout out to Marimar.
She was mentioning that, like, he's such a cool character because he kind of defeats this whole, like, masculinity that you're supposed to have. Like, he's very, very, like, cares about what he looks like so much.
Oh,
he's, like, the ultimate, ultimate. Yeah, he's Jane's dad.
He's a diva.
And he's actually, like, in the show, he's an actor who is on novelas.
He's playing himself.
And he's basically, he's a novelero. Which is hilarious.
Yeah, in real life you'd recognize him. He's been, I think, wasn't he in like Betty La Fea?
Betty La Fea.
Yeah,
the Spanish one.
He's super popping. Like if you watch novelas, you know who he is.
And he has that accent, and I don't know. So it's kind of cool. Like this is like a satirical type of novela esque show, and within it you have people on novelas being just extremely dramatic on screen, off screen, and then once again on screen. Like it doesn't you have to watch it to kind of make sense of that whole thing. I'm trying to figure out if he's Mexican or not.
I feel like he's Colombian, but I could be wrong, just because I feel like that's where all the novelas are from, are like Colombian Venezuela.
Yeah,
because Betty La Fea was originally like Colombian, right? Or Argentina.
No, it's Argentino.
It was Mexican. I don't know. I'm finding out because
yeah, he's Mexican.
He's even cooler
Mexican. I don't know what he's supposed to be in the show. I'm not 100% sure about that, but he's hilarious, and he doesn't care about what people think about him. Like he doesn't care that people know that he cares about his looks.
He's very feminine, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, like his favorite color is lavender. Like everything he wears and does has to have something with lavender.
Yeah, he fucks with the gender binary for sure. Like he gives no fucks.
Yeah, which is pretty, that's pretty cool part of it, even though the show and the casting has its flaws.
But it's still unique in that it has like a lot of Latino characters on anything, period.
Yeah, so the showrunner or the person that wanted to create this, it kind of like me covering this is like good timing because of something that I've been thinking about lately.
Right.
Which is like, obviously me personally, I'm like, I want Latino people to create Latino shows and Latino films. Black people should be creating Latino black films and black TV shows, et cetera, et cetera. Like, we can go on and on. Because there's been the argument brought up in all forms of media,
mm-hmm.
in books, TV, film. Like, should white people only write about their own white experiences? Or should they go out of their comfort zone and then, like, research other cultures and then, you know, do a good job, well done, and create shows about Latinos, for example?
Well, my thing with that is that as long as I don't mind with people of different, you know, ethnicities, different backgrounds to, like, say, run a show, as long as they have people there consulting them.
Yeah. Kind of. So, yeah, so that's what I mean by real, well-researched. Like, as long as it's well done, as long as, even though it's not their own experience, it's not their perspective, but they're the ones that are kind of taking, they're creating it at the end of the day.
Well, I guess what I mean is that for them to kind of be the, I don't mind if they're the head of the ship, as long as everyone in the cast and the crew is checking them and they're people of color, to keep them authentic, to keep them compassionate, keep them on, like, you
know. What about in the case of a book? Like, if somebody's writing a book, like, yeah, they just have to have their sources, right? Because obviously nobody else is going to write that book for them. Otherwise, it's not their book anymore.
Well, I mean, a writer's room is different. It's comprised of, like, right, people.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not just,
as long as that
about...
writer's room is, like, full of people of color with different, yeah, experiences, and to keep it authentic and real, I don't mind who's, like, the head of the boat. Like, I wouldn't... I want someone of color to keep it authentic, to keep it real. But, I mean...
But in other cases,
like, if that can't be the case, then I want them to be surrounded by people of color who, to keep them
so
in check.
Okay, so yeah, that kind of answers my question in a way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because
what do you think
about
it though?
Because this particular series was created by a white woman.
Yeah, you told me about that.
Like, yeah, like, I heard her speak. What was kind of crazy to me is, like, I went to this panel about diversity in television. Yep. Yeah, and oh, that God. and there was six people on that stage, and they were all white.
Oh God.
And she was one of them, and she was on that stage because she's doing Jane the Virgin, which is a diverse show. And then I will say, like, one of them, he was gay, so I mean, okay, he had that going for him. But all of these six creators had put their time and efforts into making shows about something that had nothing to do with them. And I'm not even saying they did a bad job. I don't think they did do a
no,
bad job.
They
I think they
do
did
a bad
well
job.
But they're getting all this credit and recognition for diversity when that stage was not
and those
even...
stories are about people who are completely different from them.
That stage was not full of diversity. It was not diverse itself.
No, I understand. Yeah, I completely agree. They shouldn't have had them on that
no,
panel.
No, I mean, I don't disagree that they were the showrunners of diverse shows. And that's what the panel was about, diverse shows.
I guess that comes down to, you know, us. Like, you know, like, the end of that Camila Cabello video was like, if you don't like it, make your own. You know, and it's like, true.
But it's not that simple. Like,
it's not. It's complete.
Yeah,
it's so difficult because
the system
you have to
is
kind
of set up against you.
Yeah, the system is set up against people of color.
Yeah.
But
it's just kind of like, you're going to have no matter what, like, yeah, like, I want Latino creators to create Latino content, for example.
Oh, fuck,
but,
yeah, please.
But at the same time, there's people that are already in the industry and they're going to, you know, they have to fill these time slots on these TV shows and they have to put something there. So do I want them to put stuff about my culture? You know what I mean? Like,
without having the true understanding of it.
Like, true understanding or not, that aside, it's like, they have this opportunity. Somebody is asking them to pitch a show because they've done great work and they want to work with that person. And this person is a white person with, like, no diversity whatsoever. And they want to tell a story that's not the same old white thing.
True.
It's like, I kind of go back and forth on that. I don't think there's a straight answer there.
It doesn't
there.
Sit well with me.
I don't think there's a straight answer there. Like, yeah. I'm all for more diversity, period. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when kids or teenagers or even me sometimes watch a show like Jane the Virgin, I'm not thinking, who made this? I'm thinking, this is made. I'm looking at it, I'm consuming it, and I'm enjoying it. So it's just... I kind of go back and forth on it. I don't know. Like, I don't think that there's a clear answer there. I'm not going to... throw my bags and I don't know what euphemism to use right now, but like, I'm not gonna side with one or the other. Like, I just think it's a conversation we need to keep having.
It is a conversation we need to keep having because it doesn't sit well with me that you said that entire panel about diversity was white.
If we walked into that thing and sat down, mm-hmm. they walked up on that stage and I was just like, this is a diversity in TV show.
Yeah.
Like, but their shows were legit, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I'd seen it, and, like, they'd won awards, and I was even upset about one of them getting canceled. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, I go back,
like,
and forth.
You like that the show was made, you like that the show is diverse, but it doesn't sit well with you that's what
I like
they
that.
Call diversity.
No,
as
no,
far
no,
as that panel. No, I'm saying just the panel.
Yeah, yeah,
just
yeah.
the panel. Not necessarily what they did,
well,
but, like,
it was about diverse
sitting
shows.
There on that panel, I was like... You,
what
when,
I don't like
you
is
say that,
that,
yeah.
is that none of those people... could have made this show without people of color, but they are the ones that are going to get the credit at the end of it. And that's what doesn't sit well with me. Not that they don't earn it, not that they didn't do the work, not that if a Latino person had been up there on that stage anyways, they would have done the same amount of work.
No, but if you think about it, like, these are stories that were told to them. These are stories that didn't represent them or anyone. Maybe people they knew, but this wasn't their reality. And this is a lot of other people's realities. So
yeah, but at the same time, like, these people...
I'm not
saying the shows that they put on the air, mm-hmm. especially during that time, because this was a couple of years ago, the shows that they put on the air, a Latino person might not have been able to get that done because racism exists in
yeah, this industry. Yeah, systematic oppression in the industry.
Yeah, they wouldn't have taken this person's concept seriously. They would have been like, oh, this is a Latino person trying to put their agenda forward.
That feels very white savory, and I'm not really into that.
Yeah, that sucks. But yeah. It's just kind of like...
It's a lose-lose situation?
It's just an iffy situation. It's just like... This show would have never gotten made, period. Possibly, anyways.
And but then I got the funding because of a white person.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like they have to have somebody there consulting them and keeping them in check. So then that person gains that experience, and then maybe that person goes on to make the next show.
And that's,
so
yeah.
Like, How I Met Your Mother, pretty mm-hmm. straight show, pretty white show, but Gloria Kellett worked on that show and then went on to become the executive producer of One Day at a Time.
So lit.
So it's like... I go back and forth. Like, there's ups and downs. There's yeses and noes. I completely strayed off of Jane the Virgin.
It's a process. Like, they have to start somewhere, and then once they know I do it, like you've been saying, they go create their own, just like Gloria Kellett. And that's what's important, is that we keep going up, I guess. We can't really, like,
yeah, I just dwell think, I just want to bring up the conversation.
That's a really good conversation, though. I really like that. That's interesting.
So, back to Jane the Virgin. It's a good show, right? Yeah. So, it's run by a white woman, but there's brown people in it. And there's gay people in it. And there's, you know, a lot of... I think first and foremost, even though it's a Latino show, even though there's queer people in it, I think first and foremost, it's a feminist show.
Yes, you're correct.
And that reflects upon its showrunner. Because that woman is a feminist, and I think she's trying to be an intersectional feminist. And that's what comes through in the show, even though the actors are Latino and the storylines are Latino. Like, that's what I think of when I think of that show.
Overall, she's just trying to...
It's just very feminist. It's very, like, you see Jane, you know, go past all these, like, stereotypes and do better for herself, even though she's a mom, even though she's a Latina. She tries to be a writer, or she is a writer. So it's just kind of... I think that's what comes across. And if it had been a Latino showrunner, it would have been a different kind of message that came across.
You're right.
Not that one is better or worse. No. It's just that...
It's a different story. That's yeah, all.
It's just
a bad, different lens.
It reflects.
Yeah, it's a different lens.
Yeah, so if you're a queer woman, I mean, it's kind of cool because you have a Puerto Rican woman playing Luisa, who is a very unstable woman. I'll tell you, like, she starts off, she's kind of like
unstable lesbian surprise,
but she's still very.
I love her. She's
still
like
very
my favorite
nuanced.
Character.
There's like a lot to her.
I love her. That's, you know, my favorite character. I mean, that is the those are the only scenes I watched from this show. Shout out to me, super gay and not caring about anyone else's.
I watched it all, but it's good. Nola. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to the show. I think queer women watch it. I think Latino women watch it because it's good.
Yeah, straight up.
Yeah. So how many? Like, no shade to it. It's just. It's not how I would have made the show, and I think that's not how a Latina would have made the show.
Maybe in a couple years, that won't be the reality, you know? It'll be a different story and a different executive producer, like you've been saying. Just give it a couple, but give it more time.
Yeah. I think as long as those people get that stepping stone.
Yes.
But I do think there's a lot of white people in that writer's room.
Yeah.
Either way, I think you guys should watch it just for the sake of it, especially if you have novela nostalgia, because if you grew up watching novelas, you're going to be super into it. And if you want to see, like, mainly brown people or people that look like they could be Latinos but aren't on screen.
There's a lot of dignity and respect in that story. So
yeah, it's super feminist, like, so fucking feminist. And then the grandma always speaks Spanish, which I think is so dope. They did that on purpose.
Yes.
They're like, I'm not going to force, you know, this woman that's clearly not from this country to speak English at all times. That's dumb. She was also in Switched at Birth. That's what she's in.
In what?
Switched at Birth. It's a show on Freeform.
Oh, okay.
It's a good show. I like that show. I just have no reason to talk about it on this podcast.
So how many cafecitos would you give it?
I'd give it 4. Ooh. Sorry, not 4. I'm thinking
Bandusas. Oh, he's like, damn, girl, you don't want nobody to watch it? Like,
right, yeah. No, I would give it... Like a cafecito per episode.
Per episode.
A full one. Not a half. A full one.
A full cafecito.
Yeah, because it's a lot of drama.
For my taste, I like what it stands for. So I give it like 3 pan dulces. Like, that's me being generous. Just because I'm not into
it. And you haven't seen it all, so I guess you can't
say that. I guess I'm talking about the queer storyline within.
Okay, yeah. It's because that's a very minor storyline.
Yeah.
They come and they go.
They come and they go, but... Yeah. You know, but it's, I give their queer storyline like 3 pan dulces. Like, watch it for that, if anything, if you're not really into novelas.
I kind of like it, because at first I was like pissed off at it. I was like, oh my god, this woman is playing this other woman, blah blah. But then it kind of ends up being this kind of like star-crossed lovers thing, and yeah, then it does. So I don't know, I really like it. If, just based on that alone, I probably wouldn't give it any cafecitos. Like, just watch it, that's just crazy.
Between them two, yes. Yeah. They get 5 pan dulces because their drama is fire. But yeah. So I guess I'm going to talk about the documentary that just came out. It's about Dolores Huerta. It's called Dolores. I don't think a lot of people know about her, actually.
Yeah, I don't really know that much.
You didn't know that much about her. Maite didn't know too much. So her documentary came out like 2 weeks ago, and I went with my mom, and it was super beautiful because like when I went, there was a lot of like Latina women in the movie theater at the same time. Like, like, wow, shocking. and if not, there was just like a lot of women, and that made me really happy, like, you know, see a lot of Latina women coming out and supporting like a movie. Benjamin Bratt was the executive producer, and Carlos Santana was too, I think. So shout out to people already in the industry giving voices and putting a spotlight on our, you know, one of our civil rights leaders.
So doing the damn thing.
She's doing the damn thing. So the thing about Dolores Huerta is she's like one of the most important people to the Chicano movement in the 1960s, 70s life that no one's really heard of. She co-founded the United Farm Workers movement with Cesar Chavez, but she gets really like no credit. And there was a lot of things that she was doing that Cesar Chavez, they give credit to Cesar Chavez. So an interesting thing that I liked about that movie is that they highlighted the things that were kind of important to her and the things that people, I guess, would care about. Like, they put a lot of importance on her family and her 11 kids and how she kind of wasn't there for them. And I found that to be kind of interesting because there's always this thing that America's obsession, or, you know what, not even society's obsession, not even America's society, just... like Latino society places a very high importance on women taking care of their children. And the thing about her is that she was a civil rights leader. Like, she didn't really have the time to both like have it all, you know. There a lot of the things in the movie made me feel like they wanted me to kind of judge her because she had 11 kids and she wasn't really around. And I find that to be interesting because you never ask a man.
Yeah,
you
know, I was just gonna say that. I was like, no, like if this was about some other like revolution, like fucking Cesar Chavez, like nobody's ever gonna say, but what about his kids? Like, did he like hang out with his kids? Like, nobody's gonna fucking,
like, was
ask
he
that.
A good father, you know? Like, they don't ask that about MLK, they don't ask that about Malcolm X. They didn't even expect them to be around their children, you know?
Yeah, and like, there's more important shit.
Yeah. And I understand that this movie is meant for women, and women do that naturally, like, oh, you know, did she take care of her kids? And that is important because a mom's bond with her kids, that's important. You can't say it's not. But it's a lot of reverse bullshit because you would never ask that of a man. So I felt like the movie kind of placed too much importance on, like, you know, was she a good mother or not? When really we should be focusing on whether or not she was a good civil rights leader, whether or not her impact has been sustainable, and how heavy and how important her impact has been on, like, Latino and Chicano culture and farm workers movement. So she kind of gets pushed to the side in all of history. So this documentary was interesting because the spotlight at least got to be on her for a little bit. Like, you don't see enough statues of Dolores Huerta. There aren't that many streets named after her. And she's currently a living civil rights leader, legend, icon. She's amazing. Yet people kind of brush her to the side. Even Obama, his whole "yes we can" phrase from 2008 was her phrase. He just put it in English. Si se puede was her huelga, and si se puede are her slogans, things she came up with.
That's people, her shit that we say that all the time. We say si se puede, and we have no idea where it's coming from.
Well, a lot of people credit it to Cesar Chavez, but that's not true. That's her. And she was the one that was kind of like the human part, the human aspect of that movement. So they went into California trying to get the rights of, you know, farm workers, people who are the lowest of the low in society. You know, they get treated like shit. They get paid shit. Even to this day, they still are the people overlooked. And there's still a lot of problems with sexual abuse with women, migrant worker women. There's still like a lot of problems with, you know, how are we getting our grapes? You know, a lot of people. It's confusing to me because a lot of people place importance in being like a vegan, but they don't care about the people actually picking their freaking lettuce. They don't care about the people picking their tomatoes. If you can't look out for the lowest part of society, then what are you looking out for, you know? Yeah. So, and I love that they kind of talk about her family, but, you know, I didn't like that part. But they really do highlight her in this documentary and what she does for the Chicano movement and who she was. She's an incredibly strong woman who started off working, I think, in the Senate as a young, like, she was in her 20s. She already had like 5 kids working in like assistant to the senator. She was a lobby for farm workers' rights, migrant workers, children of like Latino children. You know, she cared about our people from the get. And when they started the Delano grape, they actually had a successful strike against the Delano Grape Company, and they won to get migrant workers PTO.
Is that recent?
Dude, it's the 60s.
Oh, okay. I was like, what the fuck? Like, I've seen something like that recently about, was it fucking to the tomatoes or something like that?
Dude,
There's something recent that's going on with that.
There always is, because they continue to be treated like shit. Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, like really badly. Like, they think, oh, they're taking our jobs. Like, you would never do these jobs, my guy.
Yeah, you would never. And, you know, that was very human. And what I found super important, and what she wanted to emphasize in the documentary Dolores Huerta, was that, you know, it was the idea of building community out of anyone. Like, she gave respect and dignity to the people who were always seen as the lowest part of society. And I thought that was incredibly important, that they highlighted a Latina doing that, organizing, getting people, regular people from the community, to stand up for themselves and their rights. And I feel like we always look at like MLK and Malcolm X and Rosa Parks, and we forget our own. We forget what she did for us, what she continues to do, because she started a foundation. Once she got kicked out of the United Farm Workers, they like retired her, because it was like a huge thing with sexism in that community. And so they like low-key kicked her out, and then she went back and started her own. She said, fuck this, I'm starting my own foundation. And she did. And she's such a badass. Now she goes around to like different places in the world, in the country, talking about women's rights, talking about community organizing. And I think that's super important, to show how a regular person can change so much for so many people. Like,
and as always, women are underappreciated.
Women are underappreciated. Latina women are basically ignored.
Yeah, it's like that thing that they kind of came out a few years ago, where it's like the value of people, it's like men, and then it's like men of color, and then it's like white women, and
white
then
women,
like, and then it's like
black women.
Mexican
and
women
then,
are like all
and
the
Mexican
here.
Women are like way down there. Bottom. We are the fuck. Last. We're the bottom. So I think it's incredibly important, and I felt very powerful after watching this movie, because I felt like I feel like every little Latina girl needs to watch this, so she can realize that there's other ways to be than dramatic, like in Jane the Virgin, you know? And I understand that that's just the format that's entertaining.
Yeah, that's just, in that particular case, the men are just as dramatic.
The men are just as dramatic. But I think in a lot of ways, like, little girls need to see, you gotta be very cautious of what you show little girls and what's impressionable to them, you know? I felt like if I had watched this when I was 8, like, wow, like, I would have come, I mean, I already am kind of like I've always been a cabrona, like my whole life, but I think it's very important to show Latino women young that this is who they can be. And fuck, you know, a novela, fuck a fairy tale. Like, you can be a boss ass bitch if you want to be, if that's your choice, you know? And I felt very empowered after watching this, very strong, and I went to go watch it with my mom. Like, I took her, I was like, we have to go watch this movie. She knew about the Lotus Huerta, but she's the one that introduced me to her, because PBS, shout out to PBS all day, every day. That's what I grew up watching. And I feel like more people need to know who she is. She needs to be a regular name. Apparently, there's a school in Fort Worth named after her.
Say what?
And 4 California schools. But, I mean, Texas and in Fort Worth, like, that's it.
Yeah.
And we have to be careful of our heroes. We have to protect the people that are our heroes, because I think they tried to, I think they made it illegal in like Arizona and New Mexico to teach like ethnic studies. And they took her out of history
to label it, yeah, to label like a class ethnic studies or something like that. It's fucking stupid. Like, you're right there on the border.
We're part of American history. She's part of American history. She's an American hero. Fuck everybody. Like, she's just as important as Rosa Parks. She's just as important as MLK. And no one knows who the fuck she is. And that's complete trash. We give all the credit to Cesar Chavez when, you know, he gets his 50.
Cesar Chavez.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm being immature. Oh, okay. I heard scissor. I was like,
Scissor Chavez? I was like,
I'd rather not.
I'd rather not scissor him either. RIP Scissor Chavez, but no. But yeah, no. It's really important to focus on her in a time where they're trying to make it. Like, Texas is legally allowing small, like, districts in the state to put historically inaccurate text out to children. And that's, like, it's legal. You can tell kids, like, the wrong history legally. You can give them a biased truth when there is no bias. There isn't supposed to be at least bias in history. Yet, we overlook small details like this. And it's like, what? No, this is incredibly important. It's incredibly empowering and enlightening to, like, people of color, period.
It's super fucking trash. It's like, what they teach us, anyways.
I mean, everything I learned, I watched on PBS. Like, fuck school. That shit was trash. Like, honestly, Frontline, American Masters, that shit's popping. Like, I learned about Toni Morrison. I learned about Dolores Huerta. I learned about Chavela Vargas. Like, shout out to PBS. Learn who your heroes are outside of school, because school is just trash, especially in Texas. Texas is trash when it comes to teaching you history.
For sure.
Even, actually, most...
Most subjects.
And it's not that's not a shade to teachers, because you guys are, like, underpaid, overworked.
They try to teach all these things, and then they're like, no, how about you just, like, revert back and teach only what's on standardized tests?
Exactly.
And then they're sitting there like, we've already learned all this. Like, you're making me go back and teach the first semester again.
Exactly.
And they have no choice. They have no choice.
They have no choice, you know? And that just goes back to systematic oppression, which is, you know, the reason why you didn't know her name before this.
Yeah.
And she's such a boss-ass bitch. Another interesting thing about her that I thought... I liked that they were honest about the fact that she wasn't very pro-choice. She had 11 kids. So she was... And she openly admitted, she's like, yeah, I was, like, not pro-choice. But she went to New York in the 70s, met with Gloria Steinem, and changed her mind about the whole feminist movement. And she understood what pro-choice and, like... pro-life are. She knows the difference. She knows that you can both be for women's liberation and also, you know, at the same time stick to who you are as a person but not infringe on anyone else's rights. Makes sense.
Like, it takes, especially for in our culture, or at least I think so, yeah, it takes a little while to get past what we've been kind of taught, which is that, like,
from religion, from our Catholicism,
right? Just in general, like, you think, oh, wow, like, people getting abortions, like, that's the worst thing ever. And you think all these horrible negative things about it. And it takes such a long time to unlearn these things, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, these things are kind of, like, shoved every day into you, every Sunday. Like, this is what's right, this is what's wrong.
Every fucking day, really, if you think about it. Like, it took me a long time, like, way longer than it should have.
But that's just because of the way you were taught, though.
Yeah, and I mean, like, obviously, like, now I know, like, I can't trust what I learned when I was young. Or, I mean, some of it anyways. Like, I can't trust that.
I feel like I always questioned it. Like, I was always pro-choice. I was a weird little kid, dude.
You're lucky. Yeah.
My mom had a lot to do with that, because she's... Shout out to her for being...
Yeah, she's, like, hardcore.
My mom's hardcore. My mom's not... And, you know, the thing is, she's like, I'm pro-choice, but in my own personal body... No one's going to tell me what to do. She's like, I'm going to keep the baby, but I'm not going to tell someone else.
That's what it
else.
Means for her, though, is that she has the choice to keep the baby. Like, and that's what it took me forever to grasp the concept. It was just like, if somebody takes away your choice to have an abortion, they can take away your choice to have your child. They can take away your choice to do anything.
And my argument, because I used to, I used to canvas for Wendy Davis back in the day, and when I used to knock, and because she was pro-choice, and that's like a huge thing in Texas, is that people are completely pro-life.
Yeah, like you say pro-choice, like you like
they think they're not a baby killer, and that's not how it works. And I used to argue with them, and I'd be like, well, not argue. I used to debate them and be like, well, like if you weren't given a choice, are you religious? Like, how can God really tell if you're like gonna stick to your convictions if you're being told already what to do? Does it make sense? Like, do you really believe in those things that you taught in the church if you have to have someone force you to do it? Like, at the end of the day, it should be what you decide between you and your conscience, you know? Like, and if you're getting forced to do it, are you even really religious, or is it just because it's the law, you know?
Yeah, it's exactly, that's kind of like
I'm the not level, religious. I'm not religious.
That's the level at which I had to get to. I had to get to that level where I wasn't thinking they're just killing babies. Like, that's not the fucking case.
No,
that's not the case. And I had to get past that. And I mean, it's been years now, of course, that I've known better.
You know, Latina women deal with that. Like, they have to fight against that, like, religious thing inside them. I don't necessarily have that, never have, but
you have to have that conversation, though, too. Mm-hmm. It's like no one ever had that conversation with me, you know what I mean?
That's true.
I had to go and seek it out, but I'm thinking, like, how many people don't?
Yeah, and I was just blessed to have a mom that, like, always emphasized that she didn't want anyone else telling her what to do with her body ever in life, period, point blank.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, she heavily emphasized that you're a woman, you have your body, you do what you need to do. No white man's gonna tell you what to do.
Yeah, basically, because, like, that's what you're doing if you're putting that shit into law. Is like, it's just some old white dude who's never had to deal with this is making this decision.
Never had ovaries in his life.
Like, you make your decision to keep your kid, not him. You.
Yeah.
And that's what pro-choice is.
Yeah. And to bring it back to the movie, like, we're just saying that that's probably, like, the same thing she had to go through before she was pro-women's rights, when she completely agreed with Gloria Steinem's women, like, revolution. She agreed, she understood, and I feel like a lot of Latina women even to this day are still dealing with that, you know, what is the right thing to do? And the answer is whatever you choose to do is the right thing, period.
Yeah, like the only thing we're seeing, or the people who are pro-choice are saying, is that somebody else doesn't control it.
Yeah, hey, whatever you want to do with your body is your business, baby girl. I ain't gonna raise your baby, you do you.
Exactly. Like, these people are like, fucking A, like, no, you can't have an abortion, but also
you don't get to have food stamps, you don't get to have WICs.
You also have no way to take care of them.
When they're 18, they have to enlist. Like, bullshit. Like, no, you don't get to tell people what to do with their body and their mind and their soul. So, shout out to her for realizing it in the documentary and in real life. And,
that highlight in the movie.
Yeah, those are the things that stood out to me. And oh my god, shout out to it. Like, the best part in the movie was the end, because they played Suavemente by Elvis Crespo.
Yeah.
And I was like, lit. They know who their audience is. They played this at the very end, because she said her favorite genre of music was jazz. So they definitely threw in the Suavemente for us. Because yeah. I was like, yeah, yo, Five Pan Dulces. They got the song in here at the end.
Like, it's not like like the genre that Suavemente is a part of. Like, it's not like that's my favorite part. But if that song comes on, like, my hips are going to move. And that's not a choice.
It's not. It is not a choice. No, for real. Like, there's something in us that, like, you play that song and, like, yo, I can't even deny it. Like,
yeah,
there's your body cannot deny that song. So,
fuck it.
I give the documentary like 4.5 pan dulces, just because they really cared too much about her relationship with her kids. And I understand, like, motherhood is actually super important and special, and I get it. But had that been a man, they wouldn't have emphasized that bullshit. And they kept it real, though. The kids was like, no, she was not a good mama. Like, she was bad. Yeah. She was never around, and they were like crying and shit. And I was like, I like how y'all keeping it real with that, but you would never do this in an MLK fucking documentary. You wouldn't bring his kids and be like, he was a trash dad. He cheated on my mom all the time. He was trash. Like,
they would have never.
They would have never done that. And so that's the only, that was my only,
yeah,
my only qualm.
You don't get a half a pan dulce for that.
Yeah, you get half a pan dulce off for that. But yeah, 4.5 pan dulces, and go watch it. Go get your nieces, get your nephews to watch it so they can understand what a boss ass bitches, other than you, because clearly you are too if you're a mom. But get every little girl to watch this. It'll help her at least see that there are other options and other ways to be, other than, you know, what the TV is telling her to be, you know? Like, fuck that. This is a real human who did real things and helped a lot of fucking people. So it just shows the best part of us and the best part of what we could be. So I love that movie. I mean, not movie. I love her life story. I love Dolores Huerta. And go watch the documentary. Inform yourself. Do some reading.
Yeah. Get real with Dolores Huerta. Or, you know, if you feel like
zoning out,
super like cheesy and laughing and seeing some drama, go watch Jane the Virgin.
Yeah, it's funny. It's cute.
It's funny, and like it does.
The format is adorable.
It does touch on serious subjects. I made it seem like it does, but it does.
Yeah, it touches on being undocumented.
It's super feminist.
It touches on being a lot of things. It's really cool.
And it tries very hard to be intersectional.
Yeah. So yeah.
A for effort.
A for effort. But yeah, so I think they'll do it. I think we're good.
Yes. So yeah, follow us, CYC Podcast, on Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat. We're there and we are responsive. Send your should have been gay characters that we can talk about in our intro to cycpodcastmail@gmail.com.
Slide in our DMs if you guys have any suggestions, and shout out to Mari Mar. Like, we see you, girl. Thank you for giving us all those like insightful tips. Like, you the shit, girl.
Yes. And my personal is MYTE Panda.
And mine's at Fried Papita.
So you can find us there. And of course, thank you for listening.
Shout out to still listening to us. Yeah. That's wild.
And if you actually like us, like really, really like us.
Five stars only.
Please rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts, because that helps us keep going.
Yeah. It really like helps us keep like coming out with content and keep.
Oh yeah, if you guys enjoy like, because we usually talk a lot about more queer stuff, but if you guys enjoy this more Latina and feminist perspective, please let us know so that we can do more of it. We want to know what you
want
to hear.
Yeah, we want your feedback. Let us know, okay, bitches, you ain't got to be serious no more. Go back to the dumb shit.
Like, please get drunk and do something stupid again.
Yeah, we weren't so drunk this episode, so sorry.
We're about to get drunk for the next one. All right, yeah. Well, thank you for listening once again.
Thanks, bye!